You're listening to Market Champions, a podcast on navigating the financial markets. Here's your host, Srivastava Prakash.
This episode of Market Champions is sponsored by Genuine Impact. Genuine Impact provides reliable investment research for long-term DIY investors. I personally use it for analyzing stocks and ETFs, and I think it's one of the best tools out there to conduct investment research. Genuine Impact makes investment research simple for everyone, including beginners. You can download it from the link in the description or search for Genuine Impact on the Apple or Play Store today. That's GenuineImpact, Genuine Impact. And now onto the podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to this episode of Market Champions. I wanted to take this moment to ask you to leave a rating and a review if you're on iTunes or Spotify. It really helps my podcast grow, and it helps me to keep bringing on the top guests in the industry. So thank you so much. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Market Champions. Today we've got the legendary trader Peter Brandt. He's been featured on Unknown Market Wizards by Jack Schwager. He's also the author of two incredible books on trading. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
It's my pleasure, my privilege, Sri. Thanks for inviting me on. But I'm not a legend. You have to be dead to be a legend. So. And I'm not quite there yet. I can see it, but I'm not there yet. So legendary status needs to wait.
Well, I mean, if you were a legend, I couldn't be interviewing you by that logic.
Yeah.
So I first wanted to start off with some thoughts on technical analysis. So one of the things that you mentioned in your interview with Jack Schwager in the book Unknown Market Wizards was that most classical chart patterns are not working, and the ones that you see working are horizontal breakout patterns. Do you continue to trade these patterns? Because you know, you still post a lot of these patterns on Twitter, on your factor report, and so on. So do you still continue to trade these patterns?
Yeah, I do, Sri, and I have, you know, since 1979 I've traded the classical chart patterns, but I mean, you gotta, I guess the place for me to start out is just simply to say that all technical analysis is, and it doesn't matter what brand of technical analysis you're talking about, whether it's charts or Fibonacci or GAN or Elliott wave or whatever the case it be, all it is a way to make a kind of an organized guess. I mean, technical analysis is just a guess. It's not a science, it's a guess. And right. So it's a way to organize your guesses. And I've just found that horizontal boundaries, breaking through horizontal boundaries is much more important than breaking through a trend line that's diagonal, or breaking through a symmetrical triangle, or a channel. I see an awful lot on Twitter and social media. I mean, people are drawing diagonal lines all over the place. And personally, I don't, you know, people are going to see beauty in whatever they see beauty in. But I find that the probability of being able to control my risk is much, much better with a rectangle or a head and shoulders or an ascending triangle, and also much better if that pattern is somewhere between 8 and 26 weeks in length. You get much longer than that, especially you see a pattern that's takes a year to develop it. They're hard to trade, and the reality is you can see patterns on 1 minute charts and 10 minute charts and 1 hour charts, but the failure rate of those patterns is just astronomical, and it's an awful lot of work for chasing a tail.
Got it. And is there any reason that you find that horizontal breakouts work better than, say a symmetrical triangle or, as you say, diagonal patterns? Is there any reason, that you see?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you have to go back and read the works of Richard W. Schaubacher in 1933 or Edwards and McGee in 1948, where they explain really what I guess the younger generation would call whales, although they call them inside operators, is get into the brain of what inside operators are doing, and they tend to look at price levels. And price levels then is really equates to a horizontal level, is all of a sudden you have a whale who's willing to sell Bitcoin at $42,000 and it lays out a distribution program at $42,000, and so and does so over a period of time. And so you tend to have fixed levels where you have support and resistance. And I think that horizontal lines work much better in describing the dynamics of support and resistance in a market than do diagonal lines.
Got it. And you've also come up with some of your own chart patterns, for example, the compound fulcrum. So have you backtested these patterns? And if so, do you?
No, I don't think you can. I mean, and the reason is I have not coded them. I'm a discretionary trader,
Right.
and there's an element of judgment that goes in. And to go back and you back test, you're going to end up having a selection bias that is just going to be enormous. And so anybody who looks at some sort of chart construction and says, "I'm going to go back and find out how that is done in the past," unless you have very, very specific coding, it's really the interpreter's bias is just going to be overwhelming, and I don't think back testing then is possible. And
Right.
as a discretionary trader, I deal with what I know. I think it's easier for me to back test approaches, entry approaches, to take a look and not have and have the fixed part of the equation be the patterns that I've already seen and been willing to trade,
Right.
and then play around with, what if I would wait for a closing price confirmation, or what if I wait to take a trade when it breaks out 2x ATR or
Right.
something like that, then you can do it. But to go back and cherry pick something that's already happened and put that into your universe to be back tested can't be done.
Got it. As you were talking about confirmation, I had a question on that. So recently, I believe a month or a month and a half ago, you called a breakout in GDXJ, which is the junior gold mining ETF. And you said that it is hard for me to find a more asymmetrical trade than GDXJ. This is the type of trade that can make a year. And so I
Yeah,
want.
or break a year.
And so I wanted to ask you, what do you consider, or when do you consider a break to be fake or to be invalid?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And in the first place, for me, an asymmetrical trade does not equate to the fact that it's going to work, or necessarily even that it has higher probability of working. It's just that it's a trade that sets up that if it does work the way you think it's going to work, the reward is, a large multiple of what you're risking on the trade. And I thought that was the case with GDXJ. I just thought for every dollar I was risking, I had the opportunity to make $10. And so but that doesn't necessarily say I think that this trade has a 10 times greater chance of working than not working. It just
Right.
simply says that the your reward to risk is asymmetrical in the trade. But for me, I'll look at a pattern, And the way I do it is I try to find the last full bar, whether it's a weekly chart or daily chart, depends whether I'm trading a weekly chart construction or daily chart construction, is when we break out, I identify the last full bar, whose high and low both were inside the pattern. And in the case of an upside breakout, I use the low of that last full bar as the point to set my initial risk. And of course, then combined with where I'm going to get in and the amount of money that I'm going to risk as a percentage of my nominal capital, that's how you work out sizing. Is, you know, a lot of people start with sizing, and sizing is it's the last number that you identify, right, in the equation is sizing. And so that's how I determine it, is I'm looking at that pattern and saying you had a full bar back within that rectangle, let's say it was, and it breaks out to the upside. And so I'm willing to say, well, if the low of that last full bar is taken out, it's not a trade I want to be in anymore. Doesn't mean that it may not end up working, that it might be a particular stock and it may stop me out at the low and then go, and that happens. But at least you need some mechanism to say, here's where I say uncle. This is the point at which I say I'm, you know, throwing in the towel, the trade's done for me.
Right. And in those kinds of breakout scenarios, where do you place your stop? Do you just place it right below the breakout level, or?
Yeah, well, I mean, the day I'm in is pretty much a guess, because I don't like making trading decisions once the bell opens in the morning, you know, whatever that is. It's different times for, you know, the daytime hours. I'll just call it daytime hours. I don't like trading overnight because it's illiquid. And so once daytime hours kick in, I don't like making decisions once that happens. I want my order flow to be done by that point. I mean, what I do tomorrow is going to be determined by orders I put in at 5 o'clock today. And those orders are then the orders I work tomorrow. And so then I set alarms. I have alarms going off all over the place, but you know, I set alarms so that it'll keep making a sound until I turn it off. It's just not like, you know, you get three beeps and it's done. And the same thing as I have that patched through to my cell phone. And so whenever I get an alarm set off at a price, I know that there's a good chance that I've just been, you know, entered a market because I had a buy stop in place, and it kicked me into that buy stop. And so, you know, that's what I'm looking at. I, you know, Friday there's a stock, it's STNG, and you know, you can take a look at that, but that was a stock that I entered on Friday, because it kicked me in. And so that's what I look for, is when I get an alert, I know that there's been a pattern that has broken out. There's been a completion of a pattern by a certain amount. And, but when I enter orders, let's say to enter a buy stop, to enter an order, I attach a sell stop to that. And so that if a stop is triggered for me to enter an order, automatically the mechanism puts in a protective sell stop for me. Now, once I get an alert, I may look at that market and decide I'm gonna change that order somewhat. Make it a little tighter, because that's my goal. My goal is to be break even on a trade within 3-4 days. Once I set a stop, that's good. Sometimes that'll change within an hour once I'm in. But at least I want to know that if I enter an order, that I automatically have a protective stop that is attached to the order to enter.
Got it. So one of your other views is that you've called coffee, cocoa, and cotton the three C's from hell, or the C markets from hell. Why do you say that?
New York, the New York C markets from hell. you know, coffee, cocoa, cotton, and copper to a limited degree, although copper is not as bad as the other ones. You know, they just traditionally have been markets that where you get bad execution, you get, you know, what we would call slippage, horrendous slippage. And so I stay away from them. I do trade coffee and cocoa, but I trade it in London. I trade white sugar in London. As a matter of fact, I have a position of white sugar right now in London, or I'll trade cocoa or coffee in London.
Right.
Because they're more orderly markets. They seem to obey the rules of classical charting more than the New York sea markets from hell.
Got it. So I wanted to get into a couple of thoughts on a couple of markets. So do you have any views on the dollar, which has been in a pretty strong downtrend, but a lot of people have been saying that there's an inverted head and shoulders pattern. So I wanted to ask the god of classical charting about his thoughts on DXY.
Yeah, I mean, there was an inverted head and shoulders, and I took a shot at it last week, but I took a shot and I got out Friday on the close. I have a rule, Sri, that if I have a loss on a position on a Friday afternoon, I get out of the trade.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I've traded so long that I can kind of look back and say, had some general trading principle applied to my trading over a long span, does that help me or hurt me? What does that do to my performance? It's basically best practices. And getting out of losing trades on a Friday has saved me a lot of money over the years. It's also knocked me out of trades that go my way the next Monday. But, you know, you can get back in them.
Right, exactly.
Nothing says you get out, but at least you clear the deck, you clear your head, you're not going into a weekend fretting about a loss that you have and what's the market going to do on the open on Monday morning, or if it's Bitcoin, of course, it never closes. But, so that's just good practice. So I took a shot at the long side of the dollar. I lost a little bit of money, but I also took a shot at the short side of Swiss franc futures. And that did better. And it's still a trade I'm actually still in. I think that the whole world is short dollars. You take a look at the commitment of traders report, and it's set up for the dollar to have a strong recovery move. But, you know, you got to keep in mind that whenever you have a trade, there's two components to a trade. You got direction and you have timing. And you can be right on the direction, but if you're wrong on the timing, it's a wrong trade. It's a bad trade. And I still directionally think that the dollar can recover, but I'm not sure what the timing is going to be. I'll have to watch it. If we can stabilize here for a couple more days and hold above the little neckline, but it was a small pattern. I mean, it almost was too small of a pattern for me to even want to be involved in. The pattern in the Swiss franc was a little bit better. And so I really need to see a pattern last. If I can't see a pattern or envision it on a weekly chart, it is really not a trade I want to be in. And the inverted head and shoulders in the dollar index, you could see it on the daily chart. It was barely visible on the weekly chart.
Got it. Yeah. So I also wanted to get your thoughts regarding crypto. And, you know, you made a comment that Bitcoin is one thing you don't have to get out on Fridays because it's open 24/7. So, you know, you've been on the record about the longer term BTC chart setting up a once in a lifetime opportunity. So what would make you reverse or revise your opinion on it?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things, and Bitcoin is a market that I trade differently than any other market. I've, you know, back in the fall of 2018, I spun off a portion of my, you know, trading capital and said, I'm going to designate this to Bitcoin. You know, I don't do that with any other market. I don't have a pot of money which I say, oh, I'm going to trade gold with this pot of money, or treasury notes, or Apple computer stock or anything like that. It was a separate account designated just for Bitcoin. And, I have basically been betting on higher Bitcoin prices since that period. There's nothing I see right now that makes me want to change my mind. I mean, there's been times since, you know, October, November 2018, when I've said I really don't want to have my money employed. I want to keep it in the pot. I want to make it available to own Bitcoin, but that doesn't mean I'm going to buy and hold Bitcoin forever. But that money is there and it's designated to be long Bitcoin when I think it's time to be long Bitcoin. And right now it's 80% allocated to Bitcoin. And there's a few things that I use to kind of decide what proportion of that available capital is going to be in Bitcoin. And, you know, one of those things is just a simple moving average. I mean, the reality is if Bitcoin goes to whatever your number is, 50,000, although we're almost there now, but let's say 100,000 or a quarter of a million or a million, let's say Bitcoin's going to go to $1 million of Bitcoin. It's not going to go there without a simple moving average going up and correct, without prices being above that simple moving average. And so if you want to just say, I just want to find a really simple way to be, to own a market if it's in an uptrend, you just look at a simple moving average.
Exactly.
Because I promise you, if the simple moving average of Bitcoin is going down, it's not going to $1 million. And so it's now how I trade is a little more complicated than that. So I give you kind of an abbreviated, simplistic version, but it's a version that I think is valid, as you have some simple indicators you can use to determine trend. And it's the old saying, the trend's your friend.
Exactly. And the other crypto that's been on everyone's radar recently, and that's also been going up quite a bit, is Ethereum. So do you have any thoughts on Ethereum? Because,
yeah,
I really appreciate
it. Yeah, I have a bucket. I have my money for crypto is divided into five buckets. One of the bucket owns Ether. Three of the buckets own Bitcoin. One of the buckets kind of waiting on the sidelines for
Dogecoin.
for something. So I'm constructive. Here's the reality. I'm not an altcoin or junk coin guy. I want to be long the iconic coin. I want to be long the coin. If Bitcoin's going to be worthless, none of the other coins are going to be worth anything.
Right.
Bitcoin is going to be the king coin. That doesn't mean to say that there are times when some of these other crap coins are not going to outperform it. But I don't want my attention drawn off here and there. And next week it's going to be this coin. And, the following week is going to be some other coin. I want to stay with Bitcoin. I'm a Bitcoin guy. My dedication's to Bitcoin.
Got it. When you look at, Bitcoin, for example, a lot of people also focus on the fundamentals of Bitcoin. So do you ever take fundamentals into account when you place a trade, or do you purely just focus on, say, chart patterns and trends?
Yeah, I mean, I believe that the chart patterns reflect the fundamentals, that, you want to know what the fundamentals are. You look at the charts, and the charts will tell that story. But the fundamentals in Bitcoin, quite frankly, are really kind of a mystery in some ways. I mean, it's not like, how corn's used, how silver's used, what an interest rate is.
Right.
Well, what's a cryptocurrency? I mean, it's a store of value and a medium for exchange. And most everybody's been buying it based on the fact that they think it's going to go up, a store of value. Up until really the last 24 hours, I think it's been questionable whether it's going to be a medium of exchange. I have said all along that Bitcoin is not really, can't make the claim that Bitcoin's a medium of exchange until some major international corporation adds on their quarterly report a line item for the amount of Bitcoin that it's holding. No corporation's done that to date. Well, now we have one.
Tesla, yeah.
Yep, now we have Tesla. The Tesla announcement's significant because what it is, it's been a proclamation by an international corporation that it views Bitcoin as a store of value, as a place to hold assets. That's just significant. I don't think people understand how significant that is, because other corporations will now follow suit. And so I think that's constructive. Now, to me, that's fundamental. You know, I don't get into all of the mechanics of how crypto works. I don't think those are fundamentals, frankly. I mean, I think you have to reduce fundamentals to is a coin going to be a viable means to settle international commerce? Mm-hmm. And is it going to be a store of value? Those are the only two fundamentals that really matter.
Got it. So far, we've discussed Bitcoin, Ether, We've discussed the dollar. Do you have any of the trades that you're looking at, you know, that you find interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a futures trader. I mean, I started as a corn trader. I love the ag markets. I love trading stock indexes.
No. At the moment, biggest opportunities in any, what other markets do you see opportunities?
Well, Japan, Japanese stocks. If you look back, Japanese stocks are still significantly below where they were in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a strong trend in Japanese stocks. And so for me, that means the futures market. That means I'm long the Osaka Dow at the Tokyo Stock Exchange. It's a futures contract. I'm long the China A50 futures contract. I think, just as the 17th, you know, the 1700s, the 18th century belonged to Western Europe. You know, 19th and 20th centuries belong to North America. You know, we're in a century that's going to belong to Asia. You know, broader Asia, you know, that's the entire Asian basin all the way to the west to India. And so that's the century we're in. And so I just think that one has to have an ownership in those markets, whether it's Japan or Singapore or Indonesia or whatever the case may be. I'm also constructive to silver. I like silver. Silver's had some huge and dramatic shakeout moves, but I like the long-term prospects of silver. I want to own silver. For me, that means own it in the futures market. And I like the energy markets. Right. And so, I'm new to cryptos. I've only traded crypto since 2016, but I've traded futures markets since 1975 on my own with my own company since 1980. So, I like sugar. I like the egg markets. I like, you know, some of the Asian stock indexes.
Got it. One more thing that I wanted to ask you was, you mentioned sort of your love for moving averages and, you know, how useful moving averages are. Do you have any other favorite indicators that you use?
Yeah, I mean, I like the ADX. I like ADX selectively, but again, I don't use any indicators mechanically. I have not coded anything that rings bells and enters orders automatically, although you could do that.
Right.
And I think that's done more and more all the time is you have a fully automated system all the way to risk management and order entry. But you give me a market that has an ADX, and I use the 14-day ADX. You have an ADX reading below 11. And then I use B bands as well. I'll look at B bands. You got super tight B bands. You get down at where your Bollinger bands are, let's say, as tight as they've been in the last year, and you get an ADX reading of 11, 10. When Bitcoin in September had an ADX reading below 10. And then you break out of a horizontal pattern, a rectangle or something like that. I mean, that's a trade that's going to give you more than a couple days worth of move. That's going to be a trade that's going to be a nice move. And it'll be confirmed by the moving average. I mean, so for me, the moving average is nothing more than an active trend line, so to speak. I mean, I think more valuable than a trend line. In a way, it is a trend line. It's a trend line that I think more appropriately reflects price. And so I just use a trend line, a moving average, as a proxy. I mean, everyone says, you know, you need to trade with the trend. Well, what does that mean? Well, you have to have some mechanism that says, here's how I'm going to declare trend. And it's not what side of the bed you woke up on in the morning. Yeah, so I, you know, someone asked me what the trend is in the market, I'm going to look at a moving average. And so, but other indicators, you know, price, of course, is king. I mean, price for me is all important. Periodically, ADX is important if I'm going to really take a large bet. You know, for me to take a large bet, I'm going to need to see something right in an ADX and possibly even in the Bollinger Bands.
Right. Peter, I've got two more questions for you, because one of the things that you mentioned just now was very interesting. You mentioned at the start that, you know, now you've got computers doing the risk management, doing, you know, the profit taking, doing everything right now. So my question for you is, when you started trading 45 years ago, you know, you had the times of Paul Tudor Jones, Ed Seikoda, the Commodities Corporation Trio, for example, and, you know, they were all using technical analysis. But then, you know, today you've got so many books, and the democratization of information, especially when it comes to technical analysis, is amazing. So do you think, you know, that major shift has taken away the edge from technical analysis?
Well, I don't think there is any edge in technical analysis to begin with. I mean, but again, you have to have a systematic way to have a guess. You know, because that's all trading is you're taking a guess, and you have to have some organized way to be able to say, it's time for me to make a guess. So that's where technical analysis comes in. But because when you're talking about technical analysis, you're really talking about trade identification. You know, charting is trade identification, but trade identification does not provide a huge edge. The edge comes not in the trade you put on, but what you do once you put the trade on. That's where edge creeps into the game, is how you manage trades, how you manage your risk, how you let profits run, how you cut losses short, how you deal with your headspace and your emotions, the process you go through to become organized in it. Because a trader is nothing more than a glorified order enterer. That's all we are. We just enter orders. That's what we do for a living. We enter orders. We click the button that says buy and sell. That's what we do. And so how do we do that in an organized, systematic way that makes sense in this business-like? That's where the edge comes in. And, you know, for me, charts are just the starting point. That, you know, I need some way to determine what a trade is for me, you know, what's going to take for me to place a bet. But once I place the bet, unlike sports, you place a bet for some team to win. Once you place the bet, you know, it becomes a binary situation. You either win or lose.
Right.
Where that's not necessarily the truth. The fact when you place a trade is then how you manage the trade. You know, I don't place a trade and say, well, if I lose $10,000, I'm going to get out. But then if I make $30,000, I'll get out too. I mean, I don't let it become then a binary thing. I'm active. I'm involved in the trade, and it's that involvement in the trade that I think gives, at least a discretionary trader, I think all traders that's where the edge comes from.
To wrap up the podcast, I want to ask you, in your 45 years of trading, have you sort of switched from, say, you know, just using patterns exclusively to sort of allowing your intuition and your experience to take trades as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. That's the kind of question that you get, you get a room full of guys that have been around 50 years trading. It's the kind of conversation they have. You know, you put a room full of really successful traders together. They're not talking about, well, I use an 18-day moving average. And, oh, no, I use a 30-day moving average. Or I use stochastics. You never even hear them talking about that stuff.
Right.
What they're talking about is just what you pointed out, is, you know, some of these more philosophical questions. And, you know, so yeah, 45 years I've been around, and, you know, we see technical analysis, and I don't, frankly, the reality is that guys like you and I, or guys that listen to your podcast, or people that go on to Twitter, they care about charts. And because of that, we think that the whole world cares about charts. But the reality is, if you really look at the approach taken by the people that represent the big traders, reportable traders, it's computerized stuff. It's not intuition. I think the hard part for me is, you know, there's part of my trading that's going to be rules-based, precise rules-based. But then how do I separate the difference between instinct and intuition? You know, I don't trust my instincts. You know, I think that, you know, I've learned over the years that my instincts aren't right, but I trust my intuition. And oftentimes when I get something that goes a little deeper than just simply what's a simple chart pattern,
right,
and I have an opinion about the market, like Bitcoin, you know, is I really have to decide, is this just emotional FOMO? Or is this intuition that's based on years of experience that somehow you can't explain? If you try to explain intuition in words, it's not going to be successful because you're going to mislabel what it really is.
Right.
You know, you have to let it become, intuition has to remain a little bit mysterious. It has to be undefined. Because the more you try to place labels and words on it, the more you're going to be off the mark as to what it really is. So I trust my intuitions. So I'm always kind of checking my spirit. Is this a FOMO-based reaction to a market? Or is this really based on intuition that comes from 45 years of bangs and bruises and real life experiences.
Got it. Any closing thoughts, Peter?
Cut your losses short. A trader may not go through a period when you can't even buy a winning trade. I mean, that happens to me at least once a year where I go 0 for 8, 0 for 6, 0 for 10. 8 straight losers, then you get a winners, then you get 8 straight losers. I mean, you can't buy a winning trade.
Right.
That happens. You got to be alive and your capital has to be together for whatever reason it happened. Right. You know, it doesn't matter why it happened. The fact is that it happens. And so, the reality is if you go through that and you lose your pile of chips, you're done, you're gone, you're out of the game. You're kicked off the table. People tell you, you got to let the chair go to someone else.
Right.
And so I think that's the key, is cut losses short. Don't let losses dig into your pocket very far before you say, hey, the other thing is, why take a trade personally? The market doesn't know who you are, could mm-hmm. care less who you are.
Right.
Bitcoin doesn't know your name. The gold market doesn't know your name. They don't know that you live in Canada. They don't know you wear glasses. They could care less. The market itself doesn't care who you are. It doesn't take you personal. So why take the markets personally? Right. You know, being wrong on a trade is not a character fault. It's not an inherent personality fault. It's just losses are part of the game. Losses are part of the equation. And I think one of the things I'd leave people with is I think that Vilfredo Pareto established Pareto principle that will apply to all traders. 10 to 15, 20% of your profits of your trades will represent 80% of your profits. I have not met a discretionary trader that does not apply to.
Right.
And once you accept that as fact, it can dramatically alter how you approach the markets and even think about the markets, because then the name of the game is how do I manage? For me, it's like 15% of my profits year after year represent 85% of, or 15% of my trades, 85% of my profits. So my job is not necessarily, I'll stumble into that 15%. They'll just happen by accident oftentimes. Just happens to be a trade. It's not a trade I think it's going to be one, but it'll be there. And so my job is not to get too injured by the 85% of the trades that inevitably will not be a Pareto trade.
Right.
And so I think that's what I'd leave people with.
Right. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, Peter. It was awesome having you.
You bet. All right. Good luck up there in Northland. Stay warm.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Market Champions. To never miss an episode, make sure to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.